Hello, everyone. Welcome to Rock Talk Happy Hour. My name is Mario, here with Kimberly, Britt, and Frank. This is a podcast about craft beer and music, so every episode we drink different craft beers, we discuss them, we rate them, and sometimes we talk a little bit about them, all while discussing music-related topics. Right, guys?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes.
Frank, what's today's music-related topic?
Today's music-related topic is Irish musicians, Irish bands, Irish talent.
And Irish beers.
And Irish beers.
Yes. Yes.
So, and Irish food.
Yeah, and Irish food, food too. So when is... Okay, so St. Patrick's is on Wednesday.
Yes.
So
yes.
We're recording this on the 12th, so that's the Friday before, and then you guys should be listening to this on the 13th. So yeah, so we're doing it early because I don't... We're not having a... Are we having an episode next week? Because I know you guys are... No, okay, we're not. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I mean, but it's a good weekend to do it. I mean, I'm sure there's some St. Patrick's stuff going on somewhere, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, but anyways, so usually when we kick off the episode, we have two little segments that we like to start off with, and that's the Hangover segment, mm-hmm. which we talk about things that got left over from previous episodes. Also, too, what are we drinking? So, mm-hmm. I guess, let's go with what we're drinking. Kim, you're not drinking anything yet, right? Britt's the only one drinking something, right?
Yeah.
And Frank, Arizona tea, we'll count that.
Well, but I'm gonna actually there's a red Irish ale, right?
Uh-huh. That we got for the show, a non-alcoholic.
Yeah, so I'm gonna be sampling that later today.
Okay, so I'm gonna pull out the first one that we can try. So Kim and I have had this one before. Britt hasn't. We didn't have it on the show, but I thought it would be a good starter. Can you do the honors?
It's got a cool can. Oh, it's Martin House.
Yeah, it's a Martin House. So.
It's a Martin House Green Dreams, a green candy apple sour with lactose.
With lactose.
Whoa, interesting.
Huh. It's really good, and you'll see why I picked it for this episode.
Because it's green?
Yes.
Oh, no way.
When I didn't know.
Green
when I,
beer.
Yes, so I was like, well, this is our St. Patrick's episode, so we have to have green beer somehow. I discovered this beer and I poured it and I just loved the color that it had when it came out of the glass. And
yeah,
I was
no
like,
kidding.
It's also a really good beer. I bought this one multiple times since we first tried it.
It looks like watermelon Kool-Aid.
It smells good. Yeah, it's... Oh, I usually use this. But, it smells good. Let me know when you taste it, but it's
smells really good.
It's a good beer. So this is, what is it? What's the ABV? 6% ABV. Mm-hmm. It's good, yes. So this is one of the better ones that we've gotten that are sour with lactose. Because there's some that we've seen that are like, oh, that's a sour with lactose. Yeah. We saw some weird ones.
It was those little apple ones.
Yeah, but what was the one that we just saw recently? It was because we're all like, oh, that's like the pumpkin
pie
one.
Oh, it was the... Orange cinnamon roll.
Oh, orange cinnamon roll.
From Martin House.
So it was a sour, though, with lactose, but it's an orange cinnamon roll. And just the whole thing just sounded weird.
That sounded like the pumpkin pie one that we had that was sour.
Yeah, like the pumpkin pie one.
Okay, so my question is, why the lactose in beers that you don't expect to have lactose?
That is supposed to add like I don't know how to describe it, but like a milky...
Like a, it's like a flavor base or something? Or?
Yeah, it's I think it's milk based too. Like, and I think because you could taste it. Like, it's some kind of.
Is it like to tone down the sourness? Like to kind of balance it?
I think it's to add that. I don't know if you taste it, Britt. It's like aside from the sour, like you taste it, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know what it's supposed to do and what it's there for, but these guys, I feel like they're the only ones that use it in sours. Yeah. Usually you'll see like the lactose like in stouts and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's just like an extra flavor profile they put in there. Maybe it is for the balance. I'm not sure. But the sour is pretty punchy.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
So, but I mean, yeah, I like this one a lot. And green apple candy sour with lactose. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. tastes like and it has one of my favorite Universal Monsters in the can too.
Oh, yeah.
Creature from the Black Lagoon. So. Yeah, it's an awesome can art.
I was going to call them Swamp Thing. Are they different creatures?
Mm-hmm, yeah, they're different. One of them is a comic book character, and then this guy's the movie. I used to get them confused when I was younger, too. And then when I learned, I was like, oh, they look different, and they're totally different.
Okay.
Oh, so I think this answers my question.
Okay.
Why is lactose, and what is lactose, and why is it in my beer?
Oh, thank you.
Residual sugars are those left in a beer after the yeast has completed its fermentation. Because lactose is unfermentable by brewer's yeast, lactose added to a beer makes the final product sweeter, fuller, and creamier.
Creamier. Okay. I always, yeah. I felt that I would taste that creaminess, but I didn't know what it was for. So thank you for pulling that up.
Yeah.
After all this, like, that I've come across with lactose, I'm surprised I haven't looked up what actual lactose was. But anyways, so aside from that, what do you have, Britt? Because I know you had something else.
Open. I have a Guinness.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
Because we're doing Irish everything, yes. So drinking Irish beer.
Sweet. Okay, and then we'll probably have another one of those. We'll have one later, probably, yeah. Maybe, yeah. And rate them. Because I know we've had Guinness before, but not on the show. Because I know we've had multiple St. Patrick's get-togethers and
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, and we did our Guinness and pumpkin beer combo at Halloween time.
Yeah, I remember that.
I forget what it was called, though.
It was called a something pumpkin. It's in here. I wrote it down.
That was really good.
Yeah, I know.
That was awesome.
What was it called? It was called a... Damn it. I'll look it up while somebody's talking during the episode. But I don't... Actually, I can look it up right now because I have everything by...
It's only, what, 7 more months till Halloween? So
yeah.
So there was Oktoberfest. So our Halloween one was after Oktoberfest, right?
I believe so.
So there's Germany. And then it was the Devil Music episode, which is this one. So it was called...
Like, was it like a real name or something we made up for it?
No.
Oh, it's a black and orange. Is that right?
Mm-mm.
No?
It was something else.
Something else?
Oh my God, why isn't it here?
Are you sure?
Yeah, it was called a... You know what? It might even be on the chart online, but... Oh, well, why isn't it here? Oh, maybe that wasn't the episode. Maybe it was the next one.
Maybe it was Thanksgiving?
Episode 19? Oh, no, it was this one. It was episode 19.
Was it called the Pumple Lantern?
No, it was not. It was called... It was called... Man, like, I have like all these
You're names. Right, it had a name.
Yeah, it did have a name. Now, it was a... Why is it not on my notes? It is...
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it'll come to us at some point. I think it's one of those things where when you least expect it,
it was called the Dark Pumpkin.
A Dark Pumpkin.
It was called the Dark Pumpkin. My God. I was like, I know it's here, man. I was like, it's going to piss me. It's also one of those things that pisses me off when I can't find them. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what is that? Okay, so anyways. So I guess that was a hangover. Mm-hmm. So does anyone have any hangover? Because I have some hangover.
our last hangover was the One Hit Wonders, correct?
Or the last topic?
No, it was the animals one.
It was animals. Yeah,
animals. That's right.
Bands named after animals.
Bands named after animals. I felt like I had some earlier in the week, but I don't know. Oh wait,
I thought we did a good job with naming them.
Yeah.
I don't know if it. There's a no. It doesn't count. It's not a band named after an animal.
What?
I was gonna say the Baja man who let the dogs out.
No. It doesn't count.
That's not going on the playlist. I know you were trying to mention
that.
That
can be on the One Hit Wonder list.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But still, no. What was I going to say? You said something. So there was one that popped up on the list like multiple times, and I didn't know what it was. But it was a budgie appeared on a list of bands named after animals. Well, what the hell is a budgie?
A bird. It's a parakeet.
Oh, you see, I didn't know that. I was like, I'd never looked it up, and I was like, I'll ask these guys and see if they know. So, all right, Budgie was one.
That's the name of
the
guy in Susie and the Banshees, right?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, okay. I did not know that. So, yeah, I saw them on a couple of lists, and I was like, oh, what the heck is that? Okay, learn something. So, my hangover little bits or whatnot. So, I actually wrote my first, like the way it came out, but it's a start. I wrote my first review to post on the website at rocktalkhappyhourpod.com. So I actually posted a review for Chevelle's new album.
Okay.
So if you guys want to check it out, it's on there. Also, too, I know we started talking about NFTs. First, there was a discussion between me and Frank on a text message. Mm-hmm. And then we talked about it briefly last episode.
Right.
Then after us talking about it, it's been like, I don't know if you've noticed, but the news has been talking about NFTs a lot now. And now I am fed up with them. Like, they are so stupid.
It's the new Bitcoin.
It's
basically,
it's
right?
Kind of, but this is what's weird about them. So it's like we explained last time, or like how you explained last time. It's digital artwork. So basically what it is whenever you buy it, it gets coded in a way that it shows that you're the sole owner of it, and that it only belongs to you, and that's the only one. So, but it's all digitally coded. So I'm thinking like, well, eventually somebody's going to learn how to hack that. You know what I mean? But that's not the stupid part. Of course, that's stupid. But the stupid part is they're going for insane amount of money. There's this one piece that I saw them talking about on the news earlier today. It was this guy who he made basically like a collage of like 65 days of something, right? And guess how much it sold for? I'm going to cover the price here as I have it written here. But guess how much this thing sold for? And it's digital, strictly digital. All it is his name is on the file. Just take a wild guess. I'll go around once and see if anyone wants to take a crack at it.
Are we talking cryptocurrency? Or
no,
we're talking
about dollars. So he bought it in dollars, and then so basically he owns his artwork.
So
and
what?
That artwork.
It's just a piece of artwork. It's just like a piece of art. Image.
It's just an image. Yes.
I'm gonna say since these things are hot,
a digital collage.
Now, I'm gonna say like $10,000.
$10,000. Okay, that's low. I'm gonna say $10,000 is low. Britt, Kim, who wants to give
say
a shot?
Five.
Okay.
Now that I know that. 10 is low.
Okay, Kim, you want to give it a try?
Like 250,000?
250,000. Okay, guys, so get ready for this. If you guys want to leave, I can leave too if y'all want. 69 million.
What?
So this guy.
Wow.
For a digital file?
In the past week, I've been hearing stories of multiple ones selling for $1 million and higher. Like, it's just digital
artwork.
How can
I get in on this?
Right. I don't. And then.
Like, I could make some art.
It's so
she's
like
I have paint on my computer still.
I know, right?
The paint program.
I'm sure you can do that. Like, it's just insane. Like, it's just like you're just like you own it, but it's like digital. Like, you can't, like I said, I'm sure
if you're gonna display it, you'd have to pay a shit ton of money to have it printed in such a quality that you could like frame or hang or anything. So otherwise, it's just the wallpaper on your computer.
Exactly. And I'm sure eventually, like, so they're saying that this is like very, what's the word? It's very protected. Mm-hmm. So like supposedly no one can get to it if it's yours. But I'm thinking like, as technology like that advances, so do the hackers.
Oh, yeah.
Someone's going to find a back way through it, and they're going to be able to, like, just, you know, either destroy or find out how to steal these things. Like, it's just stupid. Like, that's an insane amount of money. Like, I don't even know I've heard of a printed, like, you know.
Yeah.
An original.
Yeah. Like
physical.
That's the word I was looking for. A physical piece selling for that much. Like, I know they go for millions, but 69 million for a guy who made a digital collage. This is what it was. Like, any of us could have done that. And I've seen some other ones that are like really stupid. And I know I sent you a link about it. I didn't talk to you about it, but Taco Bell is now selling NFTs. So basically they're like different taco related, like gifts and stuff, but they're not like millions or like, you know, a couple bucks or whatnot. And so I, as a joke last week, posted a tweet saying NFTs for sale. And I screenshotted the tweet and I posted it on Instagram. And I said, this Instagram post of the tweet is for sale for $2 if anybody wants to buy it as an NFT. So then after that happened, this guy, he's the founder of something. I should have written this down. But basically, he went back in his timeline on Twitter, and the first tweet that he ever tweeted, like in like 9 years ago or something, he sold that tweet for like millions of dollars. And it was basically him saying, his first tweet was like new on Twitter, setting up profile. And somebody bought that tweet, and now they own it. And
couldn't
I was
they
like,
just go back through his Twitter profile, find it, and screenshot it? Yeah,
that's what us normal people would say, right? But it has to do something about like now whoever bought it has like it's theirs,
like the rights or something,
like their names on it. Basically, that's all it is. It's like somebody's putting your name on it, and this is the only one that's.
So if
like
I screenshot it, am I going to get in legal trouble? If I screenshot it and be like, oh, I haven't gotten this too.
I haven't gotten into that. I don't know how that works, but I think that's like, I think it's more like, oh, that's not the real thing.
Phony.
Yeah, because if you look at, so when you take a screenshot,
it
creates.
You know how they have like counterfeit prints? Yes. Do you think that this would be something that could possibly happen someday?
Maybe. That's what I'm saying. I think that's that's the whole hacker side of it. Because the whole thing about you talking about the screenshot, I think it comes to where, well, you guys know that when you take a photo or a screenshot, that it gets stamped.
Yeah.
So there's a timestamp on it. It tells you what device took it, whatnot. You can't really alter that. So you can find out like what is fake or what's not. Actually, it's probably easier to find out what's fake or not as opposed to like a physical thing.
Yeah.
But still, it's
dumb. You have to take it to like those old people that appraise art.
Yeah. So I just wanted to rant about that because I thought it was stupid. And because we brought it up originally about Kings of Leon being the first band to release their album as NFT. So we don't know how many more bands are going to start doing this.
Well, also, interestingly enough, is now that NFTs are a hot commodity, mm-hmm. A side effect from that is it's actually very environmentally bad.
Why?
Because it takes a lot of energy to generate cryptocurrency. And the carbon footprint for just one NFT is like it equals like a small country's carbon footprint.
What the heck?
So, well, I don't know. I mean,
yeah, because I don't know. That was like one. Yeah,
that was one of the things that people didn't consider, and because like now everyone's rushing to buy these things.
It's only the rich. Though, man, because who the hell has 69 million lying around to buy some dude's like, digital?
You don't?
Fucking...
I know. I'm like, wait a minute. I was gonna.
I mean, that's it's. I don't know how much the Kings of Leon stuff was going for. Do you know?
I don't know. I think it was like what? I think they started at $50 or something like that.
Even then, I mean, for something strictly digital, I don't think I'd pay $50 for it. To me, for that price, it has to be physical.
So from what I read,
I better be like, getting a friggin' vinyl and a CD.
From what I read, the NFT, it's like $50, and you get like 2 weeks worth of 2 weeks worth of like bonuses while you have the thing, and then you can go off and trade it. But since you've already purchased it, you get like lifetime merchandise and like lifetime seats to whatever show of theirs that you want. So those are like some of the lifetime perks with it. But while you have this thing for 2 weeks, you get like exclusive little like perks with it. And then once your 2 weeks are up, I think you just go ahead and trade it and, you know, make more money off of it or something.
Yeah. So you buy this with real money. And then, so I don't think, I mean, you could probably buy it with cryptocurrency, but most of it is like with real money. And then the art itself becomes its own cryptocurrency that you can trade. And I think that's where it comes into play about the whole technology thing and it taking up more energy and stuff, because it's encrypted better than regular stuff because it is like its own currency. So just like Bitcoin, it's got its own, I guess, whatever. It's a lot of fucking whatever digital.
I don't know.
Shit.
I mean,
I don't know. It's stupid.
Do y'all know how much it costs to buy one Bitcoin?
Oh, like a shit ton.
Oh shit. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's like it was different. So it's kind of like how any market fluctuates, like let's say like how money converts like from Mexican money to US dollars or euros or whatnot. So originally Bitcoin wasn't that expensive, but over time it became a thing where it started to what's the word?
So it's not like
inflate?
Yeah, it started to inflate. Okay. So now, like, it costs a lot more, like one.
It says, I just looked it up. It says one Bitcoin equals $56,490.
Yes. Yeah, I knew it was a ton. So that's just one.
Okay.
And that's...
And also, it's... I don't know.
But how do you use that? You're like, can you break one Bitcoin? can I have change? Like, that's weird.
And who's gonna... I mean, how long does that even last, right? Like you said, it fluctuates and it can change at any time and lose value because it sounds like it's similar to like buying a stock or something.
Yeah, also too, like things kind of, I guess, I'm going to say like coming out of fashion, like,
well,
what happens when it's like obsolete or becomes obsolete? It's like, did you just lose out on 59?
Well, that's kind of what happened to Bitcoin, except it was the reverse. So the people who got it, like now people don't use it, but the people who initially got their hands on the Bitcoin, now those who have it, it costs a lot. So it kind of reversed it to where it's like, it's now rare.
The whatever they bought it for, they've just increased that, right? Yeah. So it's just like earning interest on a stock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, just like playing
the
stock market.
Can you cash it out?
Yeah, I guess so, right? If you can,
I have no idea. I never looked into
it. You can sell it.
Well, that's true too.
I would think so. You could just sell it.
But like, can I go to the bank and be like, I want to take out this? I want this money. Like, I want it physically.
It has to be like whatever.
Use it for real shit.
Yeah.
So as soon as somebody online pays you $56,000 and you give them your Bitcoin, then you can go to the bank. But
okay.
So I'm glad you brought up Bitcoin, because that tweet that I talked about earlier, I think it's the guy who founded the whole Bitcoin thing. So his tweet was the one
that
went
for.
That
makes sense now, because if it was like Joe Blow or Mario's first tweet, I'd be like, I'm not paying that much money for it.
Yeah,
sorry,
just like,
baby.
I have my, no, that's fine. I have that tweet sitting out there for $2. If anyone wants to buy it, $2. And tell me so I got that out of my system. Another thing I wanted to talk about. So the Grammys are on Sunday.
Oh,
so they're 2 days from now. And I hate the Grammys. That's all I want to say. I don't know if you guys,
that was it.
If you guys have anything you guys wanted to say about the Grammys before we go on.
I've had some mixed feelings about it. I don't know. Because what if I was in the position where I got nominated for a Grammy? Probably all the shit talking that I've been doing over the years will probably go away.
Well, here's the thing. Let me tell you that. So let's say you got nominated for a Grammy, right? Dude, in our genre of music, no one would know unless you looked it up. Like that's what I don't like about it. Like I remember,
and you're not gonna play. They're not gonna be like, hey Frank, can you play the Grammys for us?
They're not gonna ask you. It's gonna be the same five artists every year.
And it's always pop.
Right? It's always pop or country.
I feel bad for Megadeth because they were nominated like what 12 times before they finally won a Grammy.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of bands that happened to. But yeah, those guys were very. But also too, like so the Grammys always used to fall around my birthday, so I would always watch the Grammys. And then after, like, I think sometime after high school, I was like, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
I started seeing how the politics were with the Grammy, as with everything else. But I think being a musician, I started seeing it more like, oh, you know, if I was in that position, you know, I wouldn't care. You know, it's whatever.
Not only that, but also the Grammys have a history of cutting or not airing particular...
Oh, yeah. Performances, yeah.
Particular performances, yeah. Or even just, like, not airing, like, particular announcements and stuff. And also, too, I remember, when was it, like, in 90, 91, when Best Metal Performance, Toto ended up getting that.
Best Metal Performance. See, yeah, like there was something like that happened. I can't remember. Yeah. Was it Toto? I remember.
I think it was Toto, because they were up against, like, Metallica, and I forget, I think Megadeth as well, too.
I thought it was, what's Toto. His name? I don't think it was... We could check.
I could be wrong.
Hold on. Before you search, I think it was that folk band with the flute.
Yeah, Toto.
No.
Folk not band Toto. With the flute.
They sing that song Aqualung.
Jethro Tull.
Jethro Tull. I think they're the ones that won there. I was trying to remember that. But so Jethro Tull won Best Metal Performance.
Not exactly folk, but I hear you. Yeah. They're like a rock band with a flute, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, I guess that's why. I'm not too familiar with their music, but yeah, they're very weird. But yeah, so that was bullshit. So a lot of Metallica fans are still like, they still talk about that here and there.
Yeah, I think it was the 1989 Grammy Awards.
Yeah.
And it was, the nominees for Best Hard Rock and Metal Performance, Voice or Instrumental, was AC/DC, Iggy Pop, Jane's Addiction.
Whoa.
In addition to Jethro Tull and Metallica.
You see, their categories are so jacked. There's another reason why I don't. Because rock, have you seen what bands are considered
it's like Imagine
rock
Dragons.
Yeah, and so that was 1 year. I think it was like 4 years ago.
21 Pilots.
I'm like, 21 Pilots and Imagine Dragons are in the rock category. Wrong. And I was like, and I was like, what? Like, and then this is that, I think that's another, like when I was starting to look into it again, I was like, no, I'm not getting into this again. This is stupid. But thank you, Frank, for that, because that was, it's just more, it cements more like how stupid it is. Like,
right.
would think that it's by people in the music industry, yet it's not even organized or...
It's just like the radio.
It is just like the radio.
No, so. It seems like it's organized by people who don't know anything about the industry.
Exactly.
And it's like, clearly, they realize that Jane's Addiction and Jethro Tull or whatever, not the same genre.
It's almost like listening to the song and saying, oh, it's got guitar, just throw it into hard rock.
Exactly. Yeah. I kind of think that's what they
do. Must be the same.
They didn't hear the flute, or they would have put
they
them in.
They didn't hear the flute. They didn't get that far into the song.
Best classical album, Jethro Tull.
Yeah, they would have put them in classical. Well, I guess with all that out of our system, I wanted to get that out of my system.
Whew. Yeah.
Feel better?
So,
sleep better tonight?
Yeah. So now we'll go into our topic. And at any point, if you guys want to take a beer break, let me know, because I got beers in the cooler for us to try. Oh, dang. Because I've been talking a lot, too. So we're going to start off listening and talking about Irish bands and musicians. So, Frank, it's now custom for you to kick it off.
Yes. Okay. So... I'm gonna kick mine off with an artist that I think a lot of us know, Thin Lizzy.
Yes.
And a little bit of history on Thin Lizzy. They were formed in Dublin in 1969, while the founding members, drummer Brian Downey and bandleader, singer-songwriter Phil Lynott, were still in school. For a lot of us, the band is known for their singles Whiskey in a Jar, The Boys Are Back in Town.
I hate that song.
And Waiting for an Alibi. Actually, you know what?
I don't have a problem with Thin Lizzy. I just hate that song. But it's probably a radio thing.
Yeah,
I'll back off on that. But
apparently, I think The Boys Are Back in Town for some bands. Whenever they're playing like a homecoming show from like a lengthy tour, I think Static X was known for it. Every time they ended a tour in like their hometown, they would come out on stage to "The Boys Are Back in Town," and then they would kick off their set. I mean, I don't know. That just became a thing for them.
That's cool. I mean,
yeah, you know, whatever works for them.
Yeah, I say that because I think it is a radio thing. Where I mm-hmm. that was the only Thin Lizzy song I heard on the radio like all right. the time, yeah. and I'm like, it is a good song, but mm-hmm. I grew to not like it.
Right.
No, I actually heard their version of Whiskey in the Jar too, because when I was younger, I heard the Metallica version first. Mm. Then I had to go back and listen to it. And I was like, oh, okay. Because we talked about in a previous episode where Whiskey in the Jar is a folk song and it's been covered by tons of artists. Well, the Metallica one is based off the Thin Lizzy version, which was a rock version of the, you know.
And that's another one too that's been covered by so many artists, not exactly Thin Lizzy. You know, there are some other versions, earlier versions of the song as well. But going back to the band,
sorry, we have technical difficulties. And by that I mean a kitty crawling across the laptop.
Cramping her style. Phil Lynott was the first Black Irishman to achieve commercial success in rock music. He was a primary composer for all of the band's material, and was the band's key. You know, the band's music was a key unifier during like a really political, conflicting time in Northern Ireland called the Troubles. I can go into some of the history on that a little later. Mm-hmm. And so the band has had numerous lineup changes. The rhythm section of Downey and Lynott stayed the same throughout those lineup changes until Lynott's death in 1986. Today, the band still remains active with some new members, and they now go by Black Star Riders. And they play the music of Thin Lizzy. They just don't use the name anymore. Thin Lizzy inspired bands like Metallica and Alice in Chains, and the band and Lynott's legacy is felt throughout Northern Ireland and Ireland. And I think that that's a distinction we should talk about too. North Ireland and Ireland.
Oh, okay.
And why is that, right?
Why is that?
Okay. About to drop some facts on you.
Go for it.
History 101.
History 101.
As long as I'm not doing the history research, I'm fine, because that last Berlin Wall thing killed me.
Right. So Northern Ireland and Ireland, even though they share the same land, they don't actually belong to each other. Ireland belongs to the European Union, while Northern Ireland belongs to the UK.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so they share a border, but they're two totally separate countries.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Are they still labeled that way?
Yeah, they're still labeled that way. So sometimes when you see like a European tour, like a band going on tour, they'll say like UK and Ireland.
Oh,
or something like that. So if you look closely at some like previous tour dates, like in Europe, like it'll say, you know, like Europe, UK, and Ireland, or something like that.
Oh wow, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
And the conflict with the Troubles. Okay, so that was like a 30-year conflict between Northern Ireland and Ireland, pretty much. So what happened was Northern Ireland wanted to, I don't know. Okay, so what happened was both countries wanted to unite and be one. Just one united Ireland. Uh-huh. So it was like a 30-year war. There were some casualties and whatnot. And I think in 98, they signed an agreement, like a peaceful agreement that said, you know, Ireland belongs to Europe and North Ireland belongs to the UK. Uh-huh. And a lot of people think it was religious based because Ireland is Catholic and Northern Ireland is Protestant. But it really wasn't so much about that. It was just more, you know, who takes what. And so, yeah, it was a pretty violent time for those 30 years. It came to an agreement in the late 90s, and now, you know, it is what it is.
Hmm.
So that's an interesting thing.
Yeah, it is interesting. I never knew that. But then again, I guess I'm not really big on geography and stuff like that. So Britt just showed me the map, and I was like, oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. And then I can even, like, clarify a little more, like, Great Britain and the UK, too, as well. Okay. So the Great Britain is England, Scotland, and Wales. Mm-hmm. And then the UK is England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland.
So do they still have those labels?
Yeah. So so Great Britain is essentially the one island, and then North Ireland and Ireland is the other island. But, you know, when you combine the UK all together, you also include Northern Ireland with theirs as well.
So the only difference is Northern Ireland. And so if you're talking about it with Northern Ireland, you refer to it as UK.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you're not, you're just talking about that's
Great
weird.
Great because Britain, it's the island, where England and Scotland and Wales are all one one island.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Ireland is another island. Uh-huh. Northern Ireland is part of that island. So when you all four of those countries are the UK.
What the heck? I did not know that.
Yeah.
I didn't. Okay, that's cool. Cool. And, so yeah. In geography and history.
So that was also another interesting thing.
It's spring break. I should be learning
too. Is when the whole Brexit thing was going on, I think it was Wales and Scotland and North Ireland that were like, you know, against the whole thing. But because of the population in England, the voter population was higher than the other three countries combined. Even I don't know. It was like a weird thing where it's like the majority of those other countries didn't want it, but the majority of England wanted it.
Yeah.
And so England won, and so those countries just pretty much had to.
That's so weird. Mm-hmm. Like, so basically, like, so was it like legit voting or was it like representation, like how we have here?
It was just more. I think what happened. Yeah. It was. Yeah, representation, right? Yeah, because I think what happened was England wanted out of the European Union and they wanted to go back to being their own country like they were like in the 60s. And
all the way up until the European Union, which didn't happen until...
I'm not sure. Yeah. But that was, you know, of course, we can talk about geography later, but...
Yeah.
But I just thought I should...
It's a whole other segment, geography.
Yeah, I just thought I should bring out those distinctions.
Listen to our geography podcast.
Yes.
That would be kind of cool. Although I don't think I'm qualified.
Yeah, I don't think I'm qualified either, but is it a beer and geography? Come up with a name.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't there like a drunk geography thing?
There's drunk beerography. History.
There's drunk history.
Drunk history, yeah. There should be like drunk geography.
Yeah, we'll call it beerography.
I like that.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Oh, there we go.
So that was my first band, Thin Lizzy.
Okay. On your official list.
On my official list. Okay. And interestingly enough, too, we were like looking up like in Ireland, who's more beloved, you two or Thin Lizzy? And it turns out Thin Lizzy is more beloved.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because I think Thin Lizzy are more of like, because that I feel like they're more like the working class kind of band. Mm-hmm. And you two is not so much. Maybe they started that way, but they're like.
Yeah. You know. And I think that's a large part of why they're disliked in Ireland is because. They're a little too...
They're like Americanized, I guess.
Well, maybe. And pretentious. Kinda. And not just Americanized, but Bono has been knighted. And England and Ireland, you know, the people of Ireland are not like super fond of the people of England.
So that's kind of like a slap in the face.
Exactly. He's been knighted.
He's not a real Irishman.
And he's kind of a snob and a half. So I think that doesn't bode well for him.
No, that totally makes sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that.
I think that's all we need to say about you two tonight. We don't need to talk about
them. That's funny because they were the last band I put on my list. Yeah. And I was like, I don't think I really need to talk about them. But anyways, Britt, you want to go next?
Sure.
All right, what you got?
I'm just going to start with the Pogues because you got two. And yeah, they're one of my favorites and I've been listening to them all day. So, they were formed in 1982, I believe, in London, actually, but Irish band members. And a couple of the band members, so they met in the bathroom at a Ramones show and formed like a band together, but then eventually went on to form the Pogues. Mm-hmm. And they started out as Pogue Mahone, which is Irish for kiss my ass.
And then we looked this up. Pogues by itself is...
The...
Kiss.
Okay. Yeah. And then we... and then they dropped that because they were getting a bunch of shit from the BBC censorship group. And because people in Scotland and Ireland know what it means. Here, we're just like, whatever.
I was like, that's a last name, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But over there, people are like, hey, don't say that on television, you know. And so they got in some trouble and they changed their name. Mm-hmm. And so they were together for basically from 82 until 96. And then their lead singer, Shane McGowan, had some trouble with alcohol. And kind of, I think he actually left earlier than that in like 90, one, I think. And then some other folks stepped in, including Joe Strummer from The Clash. He was temporarily the lead singer for the Pogues for a while.
Oh, wow.
And then another member of the Pogues who had been with them before, he stayed on and acted as lead singer. And then they kind of reunited in the 2000s, but I think more for like reunion stuff. They didn't record again.
Yeah.
But they're awesome. I mean, I don't know what else to say. They're considered like Celtic punk, but mostly because they incorporate like traditional Celtic music stylings, like flutes and
okay, more of the folky instruments.
Yeah, the drums and fiddle and all of that kind of traditional Irish music stuff with the politics of punk. And so they have a lot of songs that are talking about all kinds of things.
Do you think they were like precursors, or like, do you think they were bands that like paved the way for like bands like Flogging Molly and Dropkick Murphys?
So I know those bands, but I'm not like super familiar with their content.
Well,
they're
Flogging Molly is actually an Irish American band formed in Los Angeles, but their founding member is Irish.
Right.
Yeah. He's from Dublin. Singer,
yeah. So there were some bands that I did have on my list where they weren't full Irish, but they had Irish American members in their bands. And I'll get into one of those in the list too. But yeah, so like Flogging Molly, like they have, I know, some kind of folk instruments in there. And their band too.
Yes.
So but I can't think of anybody before them, because you're talking about Pogues, and Pogues been around for
since 82. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just kind of thinking if maybe those guys were the ones that kind of set it off for these guys, because they kind of have some punk hard rock elements in their
And that's the thing, that it's like, you know, the Pogues always get listed as like Celtic punk, but their sound is not very punk. Like when you listen to it, you don't feel like I'm listening to punk music.
So it's probably really more Celtic content with punk. Okay, I get what you're saying. Right. The content is like the feel or the emotion in it.
Yeah,
is punk.
The, and the topics that they're writing about, and I on. But they also write a lot of or a lot of their songs are very much like story driven, right? One example, which is one of their most famous songs, is "The Fairy Tale of New York," which is, you know, I saw it somewhere listed as the Ireland's favorite Christmas song. But it's like tells the story of, you know, an immigrant couple coming to New York and so on. And so there are a lot of those, a lot of them dealing with Irish immigrants in the United States.
And we talked about that on our Christmas episode, that song. And if you guys want to listen to it, it's actually on our Spotify playlist for that episode.
Yeah, for sure. So that's a good one. And so, and today as I was listening, I was thinking like, man, they're not just, they don't sound like what you would expect exactly. And some of their songs, you can hear Spanish influence and Greek influence and all kinds of stuff coming in. So it's, they're pretty rad.
So honestly, aside from that, I think aside from that Christmas song and then one other song, I'm not too familiar with their discography. So when I go back and I work on this playlist, I'll go and listen to more of their stuff.
Yeah.
Because they did pop. I did write some history stuff down for when it comes to my turn, but they were involved in some of the history that I have here.
Okay.
But I'll get to that in a bit. Cool. So thank you for that one.
Yeah.
You guys want a beer? You still have beer.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, we can.
Okay. Let me crack one open real quick, and then we'll have Kim.
Yeah. And I'm going to go grab my.
Sweet. Sounds good.
Okay.
You guys can hear me digging around. Oh, Britt, we actually brought an extra one for you, so.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
So we'll go with this one only because of the artwork on it, but it is an Irish, it's an Irish cream-flavored stout.
Oh.
So this is from 903 Brewers, and they're from here in Texas. It's called Luck of the Squatch. So you can see it has a little Sasquatch with the leprechaun high on it. Look at the Squatch. And it's an Irish cream flavored stout, like I said earlier. And it is, it's from Sherman, Texas. 11% ABV.
Oy, just inhale it all.
But it's Irish cream, so we'll see how this is. Kim, if you could do the honors. You can actually put them in those blue ones if you want. So yeah, like my history, like I didn't want to get into the history part of it because I get so, especially when the history is so hard to pinpoint.
Yeah.
And that's what happened in this case. And I was like, what did I get myself into? But I did it, and we'll see what happens. We'll see if I don't confuse anybody. But we'll go ahead and take a taste of this before we go to Kim.
It smells strong.
So we're going to go with Squatch right here. Brit. And then okay. Let's see. So
this would be a good one over the ice cream.
I actually like the sweetness at the end.
Yeah.
This is actually probably one of the better stouts we've had on the show. I'm going to give it a 5. I like it a lot. Kim, Britt?
4.
4? Okay, that's good. To me, there's no weird bitterness to it, but if you guys taste anything different.
I'm going to go like 4.2.
4.2, okay.
That's for pretty a stout, sweet for me.
Yeah, it is. I like sweet stuff, so. I like it. Good job, guys. I was talking to the brewery.
Oh, but, yeah, no, good job. Yeah. I was like, yeah, no problem.
Frank, what do you got?
Okay, so I got a Athletic Brewing pilot program beer called Irish Red.
That's so crazy.
They've actually got quite a few pilot programs.
Well, yeah, I was looking on Untappd actually, and they had a whole list of pilot program ones, and I was trying to find the IPA one that you had given me.
Oh yes.
What was it? Wasn't it a double IPA? What was it called? It was a something IPA.
Gee, I don't remember.
Single hop IPA.
Single hop, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was. Okay. And so I went on their website and there was like a shit ton of different ones that came out. So I had to actually add that one. Mm-hmm. And dude, that one, I rated that one a 5, dude.
That one was really good.
That one was like probably the best non-alcoholic that I've ever tasted.
Mm-hmm.
That IPA one. Because it tasted like IPA. I think Kim tasted it too. And it tasted like tasted like an IPA.
It didn't taste like something was missing, or it didn't taste like it was watered down, or anything.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that one a lot. But whenever you try that one, let us know what you
I'm
rate
actually,
it.
I'm already drinking it.
Oh, you are. Oh shit. Yeah. Okay.
And I'm gonna go with the 5.
Okay.
Cool. It's good. It tastes a bit stouty. I don't know.
Okay.
That's what I'm picking up. A little stouty. It's pretty smooth actually. I like it. And that's y'all's can right there.
Oh, sweet. Oh, thank you. Put that in the cooler.
Mm-hmm.
We also just got some another variety from their pilot program today that's in honor of Women's History Month. So brew was created by women, and too bad I can't remember what it's called.
So it was like the Soul Sour one.
The Soul Sour, was for
Black History Month.
And this one was for Women's History Month, and it's called...
I don't remember.
I'll look it up.
Okay.
The can is pretty.
But yeah, I know we mentioned Athletic quite a bit on the show, but they really are, I think, one of those breweries that's like really stepping up the non-alcoholic brewery game. And they're making it, you know, a more exciting and more accessible venture for people who are curious about non-alcoholic beer, just want to have, you know, like an easy night, or, you know,
just making a lifestyle change or whatever.
Yeah, you know, whatever your reasons are, Athletic Brewing has been doing lots of good things, and definitely seek them out, whichever one you can find out there. A lot of them, pretty much all of them, in my opinion, are hits.
Yeah, they've been pretty good.
Yeah.
Not sponsored.
They're consistent, yeah.
Yeah.
This one is called Trailblazer.
Okay,
Trailblazer.
Cool.
And it's... a India Pale Lager.
Oh, I don't know if I've even had a regular Indian Pale Lager.
So we have some of that now too. We just got it today, so it's probably not cold yet. But
That's interesting. Okay, I'm gonna try to see if I can find one, like a regular one, to compare them. Mm-hmm. But all right, Kim, what you got?
I totally forgot about this and super random.
Okay,
but I don't remember what we were talking about last night, and like Chevelle came up, and you were like, oh. I wonder if they're going to produce their beer, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I commented on one of their posts, at Get More Chevelle, will Log Argola Helles Lager ever be released or produced for wider release? And they liked the comment.
But did they reply?
Whoa. No.
Okay.
So that, to me, says...
Oh, maybe. Like we're not going to say nothing. Okay. I mean, yeah, because that's one band.
I don't know. I just habitually like clicked into my Instagram, and I saw that like... I was like, oh, crap. Like, I remember that. I saw that today.
Cool.
So, fingers crossed.
So, you have nothing for your turn, right?
No, I do.
Okay. I was like, I thought you were trying to...
Stall.
Yeah, stall. I was like...
No, my band was actually Flogging Molly, and it's Irish-American 7-piece Celtic punk band formed in Los Angeles, and the lead led by Irish vocalist Dave King, who was born in Limerick.
Yeah.
Limerick?
Limerick.
When I saw that, I was like, right. Limerick.
And so he's from Ireland. And as like they were, you were talking about how maybe like that the Pogues influence bands mm-hmm. like this. Well, to answer your question, they were influenced by artists such as the Dubliners, the Pogues, Horseslips, Johnny Cash, and the Clash. Nice. And their
that's the name of our band, Johnny Cash and the Clash.
Hey.
Or we'll just cut it out and call it Johnny Clash.
Okay, cool. We got two possibilities.
Right. We'll put them in a hat.
We'll take votes. Send us your NFTs, and then we'll.
But like she was saying, Britt was saying that their songs are pretty story driven, like in that kind of genre of like the Irish mm-hmm. music genre. Well, if you've ever listened to Flogging Molly's music, mm-hmm. they do have mm-hmm. that same storytelling mm-hmm. Thing where their lyrics typically touch on subjects such as Ireland and its history, drinking, poverty, politics, love, and death, mm-hmm. and include several references to the Catholic Church.
Yeah. Yep. No, definitely. Mm-hmm. Oh, that did answer my question.
It did. You're welcome.
Well, that's cool. So, speaking of Flogging Molly, I got into them back in... So, they were... I'm a gamer, right? So I would mm-hmm. play a lot of PlayStation when I was younger. And Tony Hawk Pro Skater 4, Drunken Lullabies, was actually on that soundtrack. So it was like on the game. And I just remember like, who's this like band? It sounds fucking awesome. And yeah, then I ended up getting their Drunken Lullabies album. And then I bought another album after that. And I know they played one Ozfest. One that I can think of. I don't know if they were on another one, but that's one band that I never saw. There are a couple of bands on this list that I did get to see, but Flogging Molly, I never got to see those guys. I remember being really like on them when I got into them, and I was like, man, this band is fucking mm-hmm. awesome. But so my turn, right?
Yes.
Okay, guys. Whew. History.
So
one thing. Okay, so St. Patrick's Day has always been, like, kind of one of my favorite holidays, like, even though, like, I don't have any Irish in me or whatnot. Like, I don't know. I always thought it was, like, a fun holiday, right? And the music, too. Like, I always liked the music and stuff. And, of course, the beer and stuff, too. But one of my favorite songs from Metallica has always been Whiskey in the Jar. So mm-hmm. every, like, St. Patrick's Day on social media, I'll post their music video for Whiskey in the Jar on my pages because I think we talked about the music video once before, but that music video is pretty cool. It's just them like trashing a house and a party. It's a cool video. That's like to me like a classic Metallica video. But anyways, I wanted to get into the history of the song itself because of mm-hmm. course we were talking earlier that Metallica covered the Thin Lizzy version, and then there's been a shit ton of other artists who have covered this song. So when I was looking into it, I hadn't really looked into like the history of Whiskey in the Jar, and we already know this. It's an Irish traditional song. Mm-hmm. It's set in the southern mountains of Ireland. So if you listen to some versions, and you're going to understand why I say some versions of the song, they describe the Cork and Kerry Mountains. Now, when Britt showed me the map of Ireland, the Cork is in the southern part of Ireland, and that's mm-hmm. where those mountains are. So that's a consistent part of the story in the Irish version of this song. So the origins are unknown. Nobody knows exactly like who or when the song was written. There are lines mm-hmm. in the song that resemble those of a ballad from a 1650 ballad called Patrick Fleming. So they're kind of thinking that it was around 1650 because it kind of mm-hmm. references that other ballad. Different like historians and stuff kind of try to pinpoint where it came from, but they really can't. For the most part, the Irish versions, it's about a highwayman who is betrayed by his wife. The name and the story vary sometimes. Her name changes depending on what version you listen to. I think there's like seven or eight different names that she's called. And the story changes slightly from somebody being robbed to somebody being killed for different reasons. Mm-hmm. Basically, it all stems back to betrayal. So going back, the reason why I said Irish version is because it actually came into the Americas. They don't know when it came to the Americas either, but it became popular here during colonial times. And it became popular here because I guess we were having issues with like Britain at that time for during the, you know, 13 colonies and stuff. And this is before the revolution and stuff. So Ireland was having issues with Britain too. So because the song was so heavy about an Irishman, basically it was an Irishman like robbing or killing a British soldier or somebody like in government or something.
Okay.
And so the Americans related to that and they were like, oh, we like this because it's like saying fuck you basically to the Brits.
Yeah.
So, sometime during that time when it came over here, the song kind of started getting tweaked and it started getting Americanized. So some of the names started to change to like, or the characters started to change to American characters. But at the same time, they were like Irish American characters.
Okay.
So it was still Irish-ish, but it was more grounded into like it, sometimes it would take place in the southern states instead of like in Ireland. So I found that to be very interesting because I didn't know there was an American version of this.
Right.
Now,
but do you know which was when the first recorded version of the song happened?
So I was looking at that and apparently it looks like the Dubliners were the first ones to record it to give it wide exposure. There might have been recordings before that, but none of them were popular. So
they're often credited for bringing, like, spreading Irish music around the world. So
yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, that's what I saw. And apparently it was with this song and one other song. So I didn't write when... Oh, so the Dubliners are an Irish folk band from Dublin, Ireland. I don't know.
Was it Bourbon in the Barrel?
No, wasn't Bourbon in the Barrel. We should write that. So they formed in 1962 as the Ronnie Drew Ballad Group, and then they changed to the Dubliners.
That's a better name.
So they actually recorded this on three different albums in the 60s. They recorded three different versions, one in 67, one in 68, and one in 69. Then they re-recorded it with the Pogues. I think it was for one of those years. I don't remember. And it charted like number 63 in the UK. UK, not Great Britain. So, I found that very interesting. And then, of course, then it was made popular again by Thin Lizzy, and those guys kind of brought it again, even more into the international scale because they were known for like The Boys Are Back in Town and Waiting for an Alibi, and then Whiskey in the Jar came out, and then so they hit it. They hit with that song internationally as well. So that kind of brought that song more on the map. And then again, Metallica did it in 98.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't know was Metallica actually won a Grammy for that performance in 2000. I had no idea.
Not Jethro Tull?
No. Well, this was 2000. Right. So, no, not Jethro Tull. So, yeah, according to Wikipedia, they won the Grammy for Best Hard Rock Performance for Whiskey in the Jar in 2000.
Wow, interesting.
And I did not know that.
No.
And then, Frank already gave history on Thin Lizzy. But, yeah, so those two bands, the Dubliners and Thin Lizzy, really brought, I guess, that whole Irish folk, like, folklore of that song to, to the mainstream.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they really made it popular. But I had no idea about any of that, about Whiskey in the Jar. Also, too, Bryan Adams. He actually did a cover of it in 2019. He's Canadian, but I just wanted to bring that up.
I was going
to
say, wait, isn't he Canadian?
Yeah, he's Canadian, but I wanted to bring that up because, like, you know, he, a Canadian, did a version of it. Yeah, and then also, too, it was also popularized here in the U.S. by the Highwaymen in 1962.
Oh, okay.
The Highwaymen is not the Highwaymen that we're thinking of. It's not the supergroup. It's a different, it was a collegiate folk band. So, like, they were, like, really, I guess, not known, but they were known enough to make the song spread more in the U.S.
Okay.
So, I think if we go into a timeline, it was the Highwaymen first, and then the Dubliners, like, it made it explode, and then it was Thin Lizzy and so on and so forth.
Okay.
But, I had no idea about the history of Whiskey in the Jar, and I just found it really interesting.
Yeah.
So, hopefully that all made sense because everything looks like a map here. So this I did by memory. I was like, oh, here's more. But yeah, anyway, and apparently Jerry Garcia did a cover of it too, of the Grateful Dead. He did a cover of it.
Wow, okay.
And also, I know we hate these guys, but apparently U2 did a cover of Whiskey in the Jar. I don't think it was recorded because I couldn't find it anywhere, which is, I guess, good. But apparently they did a cover of it too. I guess maybe to be like, hey, look what we can do.
See, but we are Irish.
We did it too.
Don't hate us.
But yeah, that was my little history segment on Whiskey in the Jar.
Oh, that's interesting.
Not necessarily a banner artist, but a song.
But I didn't realize it dated back like over 300 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, they still don't know if that's legit where it came from, but they can go as far back as to about 1650?
Something like that,
1650.
Wow.
So, I mean, and folk music too, it's hard to, a lot of it is really hard to pinpoint. Like, it's more of like, oh, it was around this time, but we're not sure.
Yeah, and it evolves and changes.
Yeah, and it gets handed down and gets tweaked. So, I mean, yeah, I just, I appreciate that song a little bit more now.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you know what? While I'm on the topic, I guess, sorry, while I'm still on Whiskey in the Jar, you guys are like, oh, Mario's always finding a way to bring Metallica into the things, right? Well, I found out that James Hetfield and Kirk Hammett are both part Irish. So James Hetfield is, I don't know what part of his lineage is Irish, but Kirk Hammett, his father is Irish and his mom is Filipino.
Oh,
so I did not know that at all. So Kirk Hammett is part Irish and James Hetfield is Irish somewhere. Okay. I couldn't find the exact, you know, I didn't find his 23andMe or whatever, but yeah.
Well, that works out. They're a pretty cultural band because Lars Ulrich is Danish.
Yeah,
Danish, and Robert Trujillo is of Mexican descent. So.
Yeah, so yeah, there they're pretty. They're like,
like the United Nations over there.
Yeah, they are. I guess that's why maybe they're so you know, international or whatnot. But
yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, but I never knew that about those guys, especially Kirk Hammett. I never really got into him, but into his heritage or whatnot. But interesting.
My next artist is a singer, songwriter, and actor. He does a bunch of folk stuff, does some indie stuff too. His name is Glenn Hansard, and he is from Ballymun, Dublin, which is a suburb of Dublin. And he fronts the bands The Frames and The Swell Season. At 13, he left school so he can focus on his music career and began busking in the streets of downtown Dublin. In 91, he achieved some attention for his participation in the comedy musical The Commitments, where he played guitarist Alt Band Foster, and also participated in the successful 2007 romantic musical drama Once. And that's how we found out about him, because of this movie. And with The Frames, The Swell Season, and as a solo artist, he has opened up for Bob Dylan and Pearl Jam, including Eddie Vedder's solo tour in support of his album, Ukulele Songs. Musically, he's influenced by Bob Dylan, Van Morrison, Leonard Cohen, and he's a devoted Krishna practitioner, and he's also a social activist focused on bringing awareness to socioeconomic status for Ireland's poor and working class. I like Glenn Hansard. I think his music is good. Like I said, you know, I found out about this guy because of the movie Once. I was at a department store and, you know, like you have like the little $5 DVD bins and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was just browsing through. I saw this one. The description of it said, you know, two struggling musicians who meet out in the street and they're trying to make a project together and stuff. And so I, like that right away attracted me to wanting to buy this movie. So I bought the movie, fell in love with it. The soundtrack is great. And I think a lot of musicians can relate to it because it's like, you know, every musician is trying to make it, you know? And I think that's like a pretty realistic story about two musicians meeting together in the street and just trying to make a go of a music career. So, yeah. And it's good. I mean, Eddie Vedder likes him enough to have him open for him. So
that's cool. I never heard. How do you spell his last name?
H-A-N-S-A-R-D.
Oh, shoot. Okay. I totally got that wrong. Okay. I'm going to look him up.
Yeah, he's a cool dude.
Come across that guy. Okay.
He's got a guitar that I think he calls the workhorse or the steel horse. It's an acoustic guitar that's got like a really big, you know, in addition to the sound hole, there's like a, I guess over the years of just like heavy strumming, he's actually like made a hole through his guitar that he still uses it. Yeah. You know, he still plays with it. He's had that guitar for like 30 years, but he still plays with it. And so it's like a Willie Nelson, right? Doesn't he have a guitar that's all banged up?
Yeah, he has
and stuff?
A guitar that's banged up. Yeah.
And I think it's got like holes in it, but he still plays it. So
yeah, there are a few guitarists like that. There's a few of them out there. where they just have like road guitars, where like those guitars take a beating, but it adds to like the tone and the
It,
like, it breaks in the guitar and it gives it its own sound.
Right.
Yeah, no, I dig that.
So Glenn Hansard is my second on my list, and yeah, I like him. I mean, if you're into folk stuff, you know, check him out. He's not like, you know, traditional folk. I mean, there's like some folk rock elements in there too. And of course with his other band too, he does some indie stuff. So it's good stuff, I think.
Cool. Dig it. I'll look him up and I'll put him on the playlist.
Sweet.
Britt, what you got?
I have a long list, but I'm going to, you covered one and Kim covered one. So hopefully we'll get it all checked off.
Yeah. Go for
along the way. But this one is, because I always have to bring in the new wave stuff. So this is a band called the Boomtown Rats.
I saw them, but I'm not familiar with them. So I'm like, I'm sure somebody's going to.
Yeah. So they were formed in Dublin in 1975, and they were still going, I think, through the mid-80s. And I think probably their most popular song is called I Don't Like Mondays. Tell me why. Yeah. I Don't Like Mondays. And fun fact that I found out doing research on them was that they played Live Aid.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if y'all knew about that. And also Band Aid, which was another, like...
I'm not familiar with that.
For musicians who are hurting.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know about that.
Yeah,
the same. Aid. Is that the same live... Was there different ones, or was it just the one? The one where Queen played?
I think there was the... I'm not exactly sure how Live Aid worked. I think there were different ones.
Oh, there was different ones. You're right.
Events.
It was like simultaneous, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So this one says there was one in London and one in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was those two.
It's starting to click now.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that there were others held in other countries as well at the same time, that it was broadcast at the same time, right? Yeah. Like to make an attempt to make it this big one massive like worldwide festival all for famine relief for Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, but they were a part of that. So the Boomtown Rats.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Yeah. I came across them, but like I wasn't familiar with the name. Like I didn't really know anything about them, but so I'll research them when I add them on the playlist too. Cause I just didn't know if anyone here knew who they were, but I'm like, I'm sure there was stuff on the list that, you know, somebody was going to know.
Yeah. But, so cool. I know them. I mean, I've never gotten like super into them or anything, but I know them because of their being new wave. And
so are you familiar with that song? I Don't Like Mondays.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna look that song up. I'll put it on the playlist.
So speaking of Live Aid, I think Metallica did a Live Aid also as well.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Like
you're a bigger Metallica fan than me.
Like sometime within,
and I'm
the
wearing
last,
a Metallica shirt.
Something like within the last 10-15 years, I think they did a Live Aid.
Really? Yeah. I don't know.
I'm not sure what the cause was, but yeah, they were definitely on there.
Okay, I'll look that up. Put it for a hangover. Why not?
Yeah.
There you go.
Kim, what you got?
Oh, it's me again.
Yeah, it came by quick. What the heck? I was like, really?
It's me again.
I feel like the history kind of. Did I blaze through that? I felt like I was going to talk longer. I felt like I talked through that pretty quick.
No, it was pretty long.
It's because I'm short. I'm always short.
Just kidding. My next and my last on my official list and unofficial list is Hozier.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, he's on my list, too.
Who is an Irish singer, songwriter, and musician. He was actually born on St. Patrick's Day.
What?
Oh,
cool.
Oh, so wow. He's legit.
He's legit, he's, yeah.
Too legit.
He has a birthmark of a clover on.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really have much to say about him other than I thought it was interesting that we were like searching it for our St. Patrick's Day episode, and he was born 17 March in Bray, County Wicklow, Ireland.
Yeah, and for those who aren't familiar with him, he was pretty big in 2013 with the song Take Me to Church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know he played on SNL too. Like that's how,
man.
I know it was it seems like it wasn't that long ago, but I remember that song like being like everyone was up on that song, and I remember him playing on SNL because of that song.
Did he have a follow-up or do anything after that?
I think it was a one-hit wonder.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, he has...
I mean, like I said, I don't know what his charts look
he
like.
He has singles, and, you know, he's...
It all depends on the charts,
yeah. But I mean, the one that we've heard to death,
yeah,
right,
because of great radio stations, is obviously that one.
Yeah.
And actually, Hozier, like my last artist that I mentioned, he's a part of Home Sweet Home, which is a social activist. So him and Glenn Hansard are a part of this this social activist organization together. And actually, they made some headlines because that organization occupied a building where, like, I think like 30 or 40 homeless were squatting and whatnot. And so it was basically like, you know, we're going to take back the city and we're going to squat, pretty much. So I think that also gives them credit, right? Because they're also like hanging out with those who are squatting and stuff.
Yeah, because they're like, they're like street level, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how to explain it, but yeah.
Because I guess they're
humble.
Because they're practicing what they're preaching. Too,
we'll go with that. Yeah.
Not like Bono. Hey, well, what did we read? He paid like $2,000 to fly his hat cross country.
We talked about that one episode. I don't know what episode it was, but it was one where we were dissing you two.
Yeah, that's every episode. It was early.
So before we go into mine, beer break?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay, let's see what else I got. Frank, can you hum some elevator music? Mm.
Or some elevator could music. You hum some House of Pain?
I don't really know House of Pain, though. I could talk about the one time I went to the grocery store. And
okay, I'm back.
Yeah, I was like,
okay, so this next one is from Oddside Brewing. I actually had a few of their beers, and they're really good. They're from Grand Haven, Michigan. This is Patty's Red Irish Red Ale. We're going to have an Irish Red.
Nice.
And unfortunately, they're not from Ireland, because I know we usually get beers from, like, we get imports. Mm-hmm. This time we didn't. I know we've had... We actually did have an Irish beer episode, right?
Yes, we did. So we did Irish beer and Irish food. We just didn't talk about Irish
the music, right? So I guess we get a pass on this because we have had the legit Irish beers on the show before. So this one I'll let, and it has a cool like pub artwork. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and, I don't know what the ABV is on that.
But your pint glass is an homage to... A fictional Irish
pub.
6% ABV.
McLaren's pub.
McLaren's, I know.
How I Met Your Mother is the bar where they all hang out. Yeah.
I know the show, but I'm not like,
I'm probably a little too into it, so it's cool.
I had a friend who was heavily into that show, and I asked him why, because I couldn't understand why he was, but yeah, he was into that show. Heavily. Yeah,
it's funny. They're right exactly my age, so it's like all the cultural references, all the references to what it was like for them in college and everything. It was exact same for me. So
you have any Robin Sparkle albums?
No, just a jean jacket. Is this mine? Yeah.
I this one had some of that other weird beer in there, and I was like, I don't know how good that was.
This has no scent. I don't smell anything.
There's something there, but it's not super strong.
I feel like my cup just smells like stout.
Let's see.
That's why I poured yours in the clean one, because
you're my friend.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We could.
No, it's okay. It's just like he's like, it doesn't have a smell. I'm like, what? Mine smells like the other one.
I don't know if you can see through the glass, but it does have a red tinge to it. It is a red. So there's another one that's an Irish red. I think it's an O'Hara's or something like that.
Okay.
Kind of tastes like this. It does. It tastes like a legit red. It doesn't have a. I don't know. It's not. It's very crisp. It's got sweetness, but it's not like super sweet. 6% ABV. So Britt, I don't know if you'll like this. Like,
I like it. I think you guys will
like
it.
Like, it's smooth. It's not too sweet. It's not. It's not like super bitter. It's not as strong as a real Irish red. That's like an imported one, but it's got that red. Irish red flavor.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like it too.
I'm going to give it a 5. I like this one.
I do. I like 4.3.
Okay, Britt.
I was going to say 4.5.
Okay. Yeah. No, so far we've had good luck on this episode. So with that, So with that, I'm going to go on to my next I know, right? We might get some crap.
I don't know how some of the Irish people might feel about Bailey's, but there used to be a restaurant here in town. It was a chain of restaurants called Bennigan's.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember Bennigan?
Yeah. Okay.
It sounds familiar.
We had him in North
there
Texas.
There was one by
a
Guitar
well.
Center.
Huh.
Yeah, there was. There was.
It was like Irish themed?
Yeah, like a... Yeah.
Yeah, I think I remember yeah. that, but I don't think I ever off. I don't think I ever ate. She's all like, she's like
yeah.
That's what you want to call it.
Super Americanized Irish yeah. pubby type yeah. place yeah, like we have like our, which are right, all right. over the country
yeah.
where they have stuff like quote unquote Irish nachos,
yeah.
you know,
yeah. Irish nachos,
I mean, you know, which are basically like
authentic,
nacho stuff.
Authentic Irish nachos.
Oh yes, yeah, on potatoes.
Didn't we go to? Where did we go? And we were going to play that Trivial Pursuit from like
what was the, name
the
of,
18th century.
Oh, the something Rose?
No. No. It used to be that. It used to be Lion and Rose, but
Lion
now
Rose,
it's the Winchester.
Oh, the Winchester. Oh,
yeah.
The
it
Winchester.
Was like a British
Oh, that's British.
Pub. British pub, mm-hmm. yeah.
Okay.
Wrong part of the...
Wrong
Which
wrong
is the same name as...
Wrong island.
Wrong island.
Yeah.
What's which, the UK?
Yeah, there you go. Well, which is the name of the pub in... Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that
yeah,
is.
That's
yeah,
right, that's right.
The Winchester.
The Winchester.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that movie forever. That was one of my favorite movies for a long time.
Wait, was The Lion and the Rose the Irish pub?
No, that,
no,
one's
that
British,
one's
British
too.
Oh,
yeah.
Down
it on the river,
Irish-y.
We have Dirty Nellie's.
Oh, yeah.
That's mm-hmm. an Irish, supposedly Irish pub. For a while, there was a place here called Moe's. And
oh,
that's
that
already
pretty.
Gone.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There are several around town.
Where's the one that's downtown, but it's like not on the Riverwalk? It's like on the street level, and they always have like a something O'Brien's.
Pat O'Brien's. Yeah, that's a chain. Brian's.
Oh, that's a
that's
chain.
That's a big chain. Oh. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that the original
oh, yeah,
Pat O'Brien's
in, like,
is in
Louisiana,
New Orleans.
Right?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
the?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, that's legit Irish.
Yeah.
So. Well, anyways, so so
bad.
So my next band artist. Is a Scottish-Irish rock band that formed in 94. They actually formed in Dundee, uh-huh. Scotland, but I'll tell you why they're on my list. Snow Patrol.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So Snow Patrol is actually considered Scottish-Irish because there's actually five members in the band. Four of them are Irish, and one of them is Scottish.
Okay.
So they're actually majority Irish. They were...
Majority UK.
Yeah, so they were they were popular in the late 2000s with their song Chasing Cars. Mm-hmm. I know they were like on soundtracks and shit yeah. like all over the place. I don't know what happened to them. They're actually still active. But that was one of my bands. Mm-hmm. Another band that I have on my list. Actually, before I don't want to cut anyone off because I don't know who else has these. Britt, do you have anyone else on your list?
I've got a lot.
You do?
Okay,
good.
I had 12 total.
Oh,
okay,
wow.
good. You know what?
I had two.
You know what? I'm going to skip mine then. Snow Patrol is going to be mine for this turn. I'm going to go ahead and go to Frank and Britt and go back around.
I've got two more on my
go for it.
On my list.
We should do this one.
Okay. So this was one that
we both
shared. Okay. It's Sinead O'Connor.
Yep, I had her on my list, but I was like, I think I should pass it to somebody. somebody
and
else.
Yeah, she's a singer-songwriter and political activist from Glen. I don't know. It's okay. In English, I think it's pronounced Glengarry, but I think in Irish, it's got a totally different.
Ah, okay, probably,
yeah.
probably.
So she's from Glengarry, which is a suburb of Dublin, and I think I don't know. There's some distinctions with that, right? Like you don't say you're from Dublin proper; you're from such and such place, Dublin.
Sure.
I think.
I don't know. I can't say. Yes
Dang,
no.
We should have had Brian on this episode. He went to Dublin not too long ago.
Son of a bee. So her yeah. cousin.
Man.
Yeah.
He's a worldsman.
He is.
He went to Dublin for Christmas and New Year.
Oh, nice.
Oh, no way. Cool. Yeah,
so, anyway.
Very nice.
Damn it.
Well, yep, missed opportunity.
Yeah,
he could have told us about that.
Maybe next year.
About Sinead O'Connor. Yeah. yeah.
Is it Glengarry or Glengarry or Glengarry?
Glengarry. I don't know.
No, no, see, no. I meant.
It's like
him.
It's like
right, asking him. Like asking. He knows.
It's like
no. I went to like, Dublin.
like Scotland, Edinburgh.
Uh-huh.
Edinburgh. You know, it's actually pronounced Edinburgh.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But you know,
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it, okay. it's one of those things, I guess.
the last five letters are silent. No, I'm
correct.
Just
yeah, and. Yeah, you know, singer-songwriter from Glengarry, Dublin, who's gained major attention for her outspoken criticisms on religion, child abuse, women's rights, and war. Despite her confrontational ideology, she's enjoyed a successful music career, and over the years, she's collaborated with Wyclef Jean, Eurythmics, and Mary J. Blige.
Damn.
And will soon be releasing a memoir entitled Rememberings. It'll be coming out sometime this summer.
Oh, wow.
Musically, she's influenced by Bob Marley, Bob Dylan, and the Pretenders.
I was going to say all the Bobs.
What other Bobs?
Bob Marley, you got? Bob Dylan, Bobs.
Bob Hope.
Bob Hope.
Bob Hope. Bob Ross?
Bob Ross. Yeah. you know, and like I said, she's no stranger to controversy.
Nope.
And, you know, you can look up a list of her controversial remarks. And I think if you want to, like, study it a little more, I mean, that's definitely, like, a personal endeavor. But she's an interesting character. You know, if you can get past her ideology, you can get into her music. So I think, I think she's definitely one that's one of those interesting artists. And there's always an interesting artist that pops up. Well, actually, there's several interesting artists that always pop up in our episodes, yeah. You know, and like we don't really think much about who they are as a person. We just listen to the music and then we find out about them.
I learned so much about Bloodhound Gang from you last episode.
Yeah.
I was like, what? Well,
that's important because you need to know that.
I was like, I did not know that. I'm going to take the Bloodhound Gang sticker off the back of our car. I'm just...
Y'all have one?
No, I'm just kidding.
We don't. And my last artist is...
Wait, what? Rude.
What happened?
I'm sorry.
Well, y'all, because y'all were tag teaming.
I wanted you to introduce the conversation about Sinead O'Connor, but not like totally bogart it.
Okay, so Sinead O'Connor.
He's all like, there's too much to say next.
No, all right. I was just going to add a little to it.
Sinead O'Connor part two.
Thank you. No, I was just going to add to that, you know, like Frank was talking about the controversy surrounding her, and that has kind of always been present because she's always been very outspoken and was super infamous for her 1992 performance on Saturday Night Live when she ripped a picture of the Pope.
I remember.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't see it when it happened, but I remember the performance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Super controversial, and the producers didn't know she was going to do that. Mm-hmm. And so it was, you know, live. There was nothing to do to stop it, and that was a big, big deal. And I think she's kind of just continued along those same lines the whole time, refusing to perform at different things because they might play the national anthem and things like that, which is cool. But I just wanted to comment that she did a duet with the Pogues, their song Haunted, and it's awesome.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and put that on the list.
It's so crazy how, like, in that region, the UK and, like, Poland and stuff, like, we saw that stuff with Nergal, and he's being like, prosecuted by the Polish
government, the blasphemy laws,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's so crazy how they're like, that's like a big thing over there, like the censorship of like the church,
of religious,
I guess, and religious stuff. And like here, it's like not a thing. Like it's kind
of
like
well, it's because we have
separation of church and state.
Well, that too, and also to our constitution, like lets us
right.
Yeah, free speech.
Yeah, free speech and all that
it's
stuff.
Just crazy,
so
though, like how, but I guess what I'm trying to say is like how that is where, like, in the other side across the pond, that's where, like, these places are, like, the Pope is and everything.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah,
really
yeah.
big, but, like, there's a lot of people that are against it.
Yeah.
You would think that just being there, like, naturally that they would be, like, for it, right? Like, they'd be like, oh, like, I was raised with this.
And Sinead O'Connor was raised Roman Catholic, as so many Irish people are.
But there's always, like, she was a rebel, and there's always going to be, like, those where like, they're like, oh, no, this is stupid. Like, this is not how... what's the word? Like, it's not...
Just questioning.
Yeah, exactly.
Doubting
and
just kind of, getting in there and scrutinizing everything that you grew up with. I think that's common here and for us, right? Yeah. And I think, you know, in other places as well, but we do have the freedom to speak out about it a lot more than other places.
It's crazy.
And it just, like, for us, it doesn't stand out as much because we can say whatever we want. It's going to, well, you know what I mean, to some extent, but it's going to be like, we're not going to get, like, prosecuted for it.
Right. No.
But, like, over there if they were to say,
but
definitely.
You're choosing those, right?
Yeah. But, like, over there, like, if you even say it, you're... So
that's also, crazy. I think it's got to do with, like, Poland and all these former Soviet countries where there was no religion. It was all atheism. And I think when the Soviet Union fell and they started allowing religion, I think a lot of people were, like, realizing, hey, this is my identity that for so long was suppressed by the government, you know? So I think that's why a lot of them latched on to religion. Because even to, like, Norway, you know, Norway is a very, like, socialist country, but it's also a very fundamentally Christian country, and which is, you know, where you get the whole controversy with the black metal bans and stuff and the church burnings and everything. And I'm actually reading a book on that, like on the whole history of black metal. It's pretty interesting. But a lot of these, you know, European countries, you know, that were former Soviet countries, now that they have a religious identity, they cling onto it so much, you know.
Yeah.
Some of them have blasphemy laws. Some don't. Some are just like, you know, do whatever you want as long as you're not hurting others. And I guess Poland probably takes a little more serious, you know. Yeah. So.
Yeah, some are like they're more old school and they don't grow out of that.
Yeah.
That right. Mindset or whatnot, but.
Yeah.
But anyways, next, what was your next artist?
Oh, yeah. My next and my last one is probably one of my favorite loudest bands ever.
Okay. You too?
No, not quite.
Got him.
Is a band called My Bloody Valentine.
Oh, I saw them on a list too, but I thought somebody was going to mention them. And I was
it was me. I don't have Limp Bizkit on my list.
I thought you were going to find a way to sting me.
They probably have a big following.
Fred Durst is twice removed.
I know, right? No, I got you covered. I got you covered later.
And My Bloody Valentine was formed in Dublin in 1983. And after an unsuccessful start, in 1988, they released their critically acclaimed debut album entitled Isn't Anything, which was followed by the even more successful second album, Loveless, in 1991. The band, unfortunately, could not break the dreaded second album curse and broke up in 97 due to internal strife and just overall creative differences. And however, the band reunited in 2007. They toured extensively, and in 2013, 22 years after Loveless, they released their third and most recent album, MBV, to even much further acclaim. My Bloody Valentine's music, for me personally, I think it's best characterized as like a literal wall of sound and heavy use of pedals to create textures and soundscapes. And their concerts are known to be extremely loud, at times reaching 130 decibels, which is the equivalent of a military jet aircraft like taking off.
Damn. Have you ever seen them live?
Once, yeah. And my ears are ringing for four days afterwards.
Dang, man, I have not been to a show like that in a long time where my ears were ringing for like a day after.
That's good. That's really bad for you.
I know it is bad. I know.
I use earplugs.
I do too.
Maybe that's why my ears don't ring anymore. Well,
maybe that's why he can't hear me when he's standing running by and I'm like yelling at something at him and he's just standing there on his phone.
Because
I'm
like, dude, back in the day.
They say that that pitch that you hear when your ears ringing is like the sound that you've lost. You're never going to hear that again. No, for real.
I believe that range or whatever. Well, because back in the day, I remember going to shows like that and I would leave, because I would be in the front and like my ears were ringing, but I was like on the front, but on the side where the monitors were.
Yeah.
And then Frank and I would jam in a room that was small, so the sound was bouncing around a lot in there. Mm-hmm. And now there's special earplugs for musicians and stuff, which Kim Eargasm has a set. I have a set now. Yeah, Eargasm, not sponsored. Mm-hmm. There's an Edematonic, I think, too. But I have a set now, too. So now I'm fucking older. Now I'm protecting my ears.
I use them when
I
play my drums and stuff, too.
Yeah, it helps with the drums a lot, too. But anyways, kids, protect your ears, please.
You know, and
seriously, we're going to be four people sitting around, a TV trying to watch a movie with, full volume.
Like my granny. The other day, she had it on high, and my mom was getting pissed. Yeah. She was like, turn it down. Then my grandma turned it back up.
Yeah.
And it was my mom was like, I didn't even know my TV went up to, 47.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. But
that will be all of us, I promise.
No, I feel when you're a kid, you're like, nah, whatever.
Yeah.
But then again, there wasn't stuff like that to protect your ears then.
They had it was the just little regular. Gun range ones.
Yeah, the foam ones. Also,
the dorky, right? When you're
I'll take tissue paper from the restroom and stuff it in my ears if I don't have earplugs because I can't go without it now.
Off topic, Frank, do you have ear problems? I feel like I did. I took a hearing test actually 2 years ago for a job I used to have. And apparently my hearing was good. But I'm like, really? Yeah. I heard all
the
beeps.
Sure?
They said, I know. They're all like, yeah. And I was like, I don't know. But
I don't feel like I have hearing problems. I mean, when I'm alert, I'm pretty I can hear things.
Yeah. Oh,
so like a cat.
Like a superhero, you can hear a fly legs together and shit.
He's like, fly over
that, but also I think it. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know about my hearing, but I think my hearing's pretty good. But
we all think our hearing's good.
But after years of working as a bike messenger, I don't know. I've had this I have this really heightened sense of vision, and my surroundings and stuff.
Okay. Superhero.
I would say heightened awareness.
Heightened awareness. Yeah.
There's actually a thing where, like, hair, since I have a cosmetology license and I did hair for a long time, that hairdressers actually have like 25% worse hearing loss than the average person from using the blow dryer constantly.
Oh wow.
Oh boy.
Well, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think about that, but that makes crazy. Sense.
Because they get the hair dryer can get up to like 85
degrees. Oh no, they get like fucking loud. Yeah, they get loud. Yeah.
And dang. Like almost 8 hours a day, you know.
Well, guys, protect your ears. You know what? I should have gotten a sponsorship for this one for Eargasm. And it'd be like, hold on, guys, a word from our... Right?
Yeah.
Use code RTHH for 20% off your next pair. But no, they were
not
good.
Not a real code.
Not a real code. Don't enter it. I'll hit them up, though. I'll see what's up.
Yeah. But no, that my Bloody Valentine show that I went to, it was just the one. And I missed, like, first third of it because the one friend I went to was just too busy trying to mac with chicks on her way over there. So I was like,
for the record, it wasn't me. I never seen this band before. Actually, I've heard of the name, but I'm not like, so when I add them on the playlist, I'll actually speaking of that band Gorilla Biscuits are good.
Yeah.
And so is Pelican.
Yeah. See,
dude, I was listening to them. I was like, these are good bands. Like, I really enjoyed the music. It's, the instrumental one was Pelican, right?
Yes.
Yes, they were good. I liked them. Uh-huh. I liked them a lot, too. But, yeah, guys, if you don't know what I'm talking about, listen to Spotify playlist, bands named after animals. There's some good stuff on there. Gorilla Biscuits, yeah.
Pelican Biscuits.
But I did not search, what were they called? Quiloids, or what the fuck were those?
Quaaludes.
Quaaludes. I knew it was a quail something. Those fucking pills he was talking about. Anyways,
Quaaludes.
Yeah. I was like,
"What is she?"
Well, because I was trying to. I'm not familiar with that. Legit, that was the first time I had ever heard that word.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, like, when
you need to watch some, like, I don't know, '80s movies or something.
Yeah, maybe watch Pulp Fiction or something.
Yeah, that's no. Going 90s. Back to my Bloody Valentine, dude. I mean, I've never been to a show before where there are signs posted all over the venue, ear protection highly suggested.
I don't get it. Yeah, what do they play with, like, a legit wall of amps?
Yeah,
like,
so you know how, like, Slayer has, like, the wall of Marshall amps?
Yeah, but it's, like, fake.
They're all dummy amps except for, like, the one.
Oh, I think that popped up on my memories today.
No, I mean, like, Kevin Shields, singer, he has, like, a literal wall of working amps. And he puts them all on like, all the way up to 10. And he's got, like, two pedal boards that have, like, 40, 50 pedals each. And he, at some point in the show, he's got all... pedals on, and
that's so weird. This popped up on my memories today.
Yeah.
So this is what it is.
Yeah. So you have like the dummy cabinets, and I remember like leaving the show and I couldn't hear well for 4 days, and actually I remember having blurry vision too because of how.
The sound hit your eyeballs?
No, I think it's
vibrating
just like,
them out of their
like
sockets.
Like a equilibrium type deal.
It was like, yeah, right? Like kind of it was like the sound waves. It was the sound waves, dude. Like it was just like bouncing off the walls like crazy.
And when concerts come back, I want to see them. Are they still active?
But what is
they're still active, yeah.
What is the point of performing so loudly?
That's just their signature style. I mean when you listen to their records,
yeah.
Because they were made in like the late 80s, early 90s, they don't sound as loud as I'm describing them.
Well, I mean, you get to control the volume.
You get to control the volume, yeah.
But so I don't have to listen to it.
They're cranking it to 11 and they don't have to.
No, but, you know, but I think because at the
it's
time.
Just their shtick.
But I you know, I think if they're to remaster the older music today, Nick, you can probably bring it up to like a 3. And
but
it's like it sounds like a 10.
But you could crank that.
You stream it to the TV. You can.
But you could crank that shit yourself, though.
Yeah, you can.
I don't get.
Well,
don't
no,
get
no.
It.
Actually, yeah. I do get it because there are some bands that I come across those older albums that Frank's talking about where they're not as high as. So, like the peak volume is not adjusted as high as some of the like the more recent ones. So I get what you're talking about. Yeah. Like some of the Metallica actually songs, the ones that are not remastered, if you listen to like some of the Ride the Lightning or Master Puppets, the levels are a lot lower than like some of the other ones. So like if I'm on Pandora, I'm like, I actually skip them because they're not as high. I don't feel like adjusting my volume.
Yeah.
But anyways, so.
But yeah, you know, I don't know. I dig them. I think.
Frank, you've been on this band for 20 minutes already.
I know. It's my turn already. Jeez.
Well, I just want to say, I think they're good. Their shows get really, really loud.
We got that. You covered that.
They gave...
We had a whole segment about ear loss.
And they gave a whole new popularity
to hearing loss. Not ear loss.
To ear loss.
Hearing loss. I meant hearing like loss.
Your ears literally fall off.
How loud it is.
That's what it sounds like.
They repopularized the Fender Jazzmaster and Jaguar model guitars because that's like the guitars they use. And they've influenced bands like Deftones, Nine Inch Nails, Smashing Pumpkins, and even black gaze metal bands like Def Heaven and Alcest.
Oh, wow.
I've
never heard of those bands.
Yeah, they're influenced like bands all over the place. But
we should be the band that plays so low. That like awesome. We're known for that. Yeah, we're like everyone has to wear a thing and crank it up, and like they're known for playing low.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, we'll do that.
That's cool. Like those, what are they called? Those discos where people just wear headphones, the silent discos.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. About those. Yeah. Wow.
And then you can control your own volume. Right. So you don't have to have hearing loss. So you don't have ear loss.
Wait a minute. Wasn't that part of the thing on
it wasn't
the Josie
and the
Pussycats,
but it was so that they could hear the subliminal message.
Oh, same difference. Same, but different.
Yeah, we'll have subliminal messages too.
Okay. Oh, okay. We'll do that. It's so low that they can't hear the bullshit we're saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Orange is the new pink.
Okay, Britt, you next.
Thank you. Okay, so I guess there's only like one more band that I actually want to talk about, but then I'm just going to list the rest.
Okay, no, that's okay. Fine.
The last band for me, or the last big one, is the Waterboys.
Wow, okay.
Mm-hmm. And they actually have members from Ireland, Scotland, Wales, and England.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And they're just lovely. I think that you guys should check them out.
I'll check them out.
The song that I think their most popular song is called The Hole of the Moon.
Okay.
And
I thought you were going to say something about cheese.
No, whole, like with a W, like oh, all of whole. It, the whole okay. of the moon. Yeah. So yeah, check them out. They're, like I said, members from all of that area there.
Okay.
The other bands that I had that we didn't mention that I'm just going to run through are the Cranberries. Like, hello, nobody's talked about them.
I have them on my list, actually.
Okay, good. I'm not going to really say much there. They also sang songs about the Troubles and and stuff like that. But the Chieftains.
Okay.
Okay. Or another.
I came across them.
Irish folk band. James Galway, who was like a really famous Irish flautist.
Okay.
And he performed with the Chieftains or recorded with them and won lots of awards and all kinds of stuff. And then the Irish Rovers.
Okay.
Older Irish folk band that from the 60s.
Okay.
And I threw House of Pain in because, you know, I love them.
They were
and
on my list. I knew you were going to talk about them. So I was like, I'm not going to.
And they're really, you know, they're Irish American.
Irish American.
Two out of the three guys are Irish American.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But that was how they kind of like sold themselves.
Ah, here's the Limp Bizkit connection.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
DJ Lethal.
5 degrees
used to,
of Fredericks.
Yeah. DJ Lethal used to perform in House of Pain.
Yeah, I think.
Yes.
I feel like you mentioned that in another episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, okay. So I'm not putting a Limp Bizkit song on this.
No. But I'm just going to say.
House of Pain.
They're already on the playlist. Actually.
Top of the Morning.
Yeah. That's the song I put on because I know you like that song.
All I'm going to say is that for every episode that follows, expect a Limp Bizkit.
Okay.
Why is it Limp Bizkit now? Because you abandoned Marilyn Manson. It used to be all Marilyn Manson. Actually, and now you're like, I hate that guy.
I got your back. So
he's a perv.
I actually got you covered later on the list. But definitely. I challenge you to try to bring up Limp Bizkit and connect it to something we're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
For every episode, for the rest of the
here on out.
From Kevin
here
Bacon.
On out. Yes.
Okay.
7 degrees of Limp Bizkit. So.
7 degrees. That was a single digit.
Speaking
I said five.
It's seven. It's seven.
Yeah.
I mean, it's seven.
7 degrees of Frederick.
Well, speaking of House of Pain, I put Everlast on mine. But I put the song that he did with Santana, Put Your Light On, I think.
Oh,
this
yes,
was
yes,
called.
Yes. Okay.
I think that one, if I'm correct, won a Grammy or was nominated for a Grammy for like best performance or something. But that was one of my favorite songs from with Everlast, I should say.
Nice.
But Was that your list?
I think that was my list. I think between everybody at the table, we got all of those.
Okay. So we'll go back around and then, well, because I have a list too. But Kim, okay. You got anything? Okay. So I guess it's my turn. Yeah. So my turn, I think this will probably top off. Frank, do you have anything else?
No, I don't.
Okay. So this will probably be like the ultimate finish to the whole thing. So you mentioned cranberries.
Yeah.
So real quick, I just want to say cranberries, they're from Limerick, Ireland as well. They formed in 89. Singer, oh my God, can you say her last name for me? Dolores O'Riordan? O'Riordan. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Okay, O'Riordan.
Yeah.
So she joined the band in 90. And with her in the band, while she was alive, because she passed away in 2018, the band with her sold 40 million albums worldwide. 40 million shit. With her.
Dang.
And their most popular songs were Linger, Dreams, and Zombie, which everybody knows. Everybody knows Zombie here in San Antonio, thanks to radio station. But anyways, so I'm going to go on. So the next list that I have here, I'm going to go ahead and run through them, and you guys can interject anything you guys want. This is a list of artists who are Irish-American,
okay.
or they have some kind of Irish this lineage.
Okay.
So Kirk Hammett and James Hetfield were actually on my list, and I was like, oh, well, might as well talk about them now while I'm talking about Whiskey in the Jar, because I brought up Metallica.
Yes.
So I had to connect it somehow. So I'm going to go ahead and run down these, and you guys can, you know, say whatever you want. Christina Aguilera, Tori Amos, Michelle Branch, which we talked about on, I think, our last episode, Mariah Carey, Aaron and Nick Carter, Kelly Clarkson, Kurt Cobain, I did not know, Alice Cooper, Billy Corgan, we already said Everlast. Chris Cornell actually has some Irish lineage. Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top.
Yeah,
nice. He actually has Irish ancestry on both sides.
Okay.
On his mom and dad's side. Matt Heafy. I don't know if you're familiar with Matt Heafy. He is
Trivium?
Yeah, he is the vocalist and guitarist for Trivium. His father is Irish and his mother is Japanese.
Okay.
So he's actually like half Irish. Jimi Hendrix was on the list.
Okay.
Half of Mastodon, I think, is Irish. So Brent Hines, he's the singer guitarist for Mastodon. He's Irish. And Bill Kelliner, he's the guitarist for Mastodon. His father actually was an immigrant from Ireland, and he came over here to the U.S. to escape something that was going on over there at the time in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. So he's Irish. I also have Maynard James Keenan.
Yeah.
So there's your tool connection, Frank.
Huh.
Yeah, I did not know that.
I knew he was like Italian.
They had him on. So the only people on this list were people who they had the specifics where they had to have have some kind of Irish ancestry.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was on there. Benji and Joel Madden from Good Charlotte are on there. Mike McColgan, I think we mentioned him briefly. So he's a former and founding member of both Dropkick Murphys and Street Dogs. Okay. I actually saw Street Dogs live, and I don't know if I set this story on the show or not, but they're that band that I saw where the guy was singing and someone stole his wedding ring while he was crowd surfing.
Oh
yeah.
So that was Street Dogs. So wow. He actually founded both bands.
Right.
And he's actually no longer in either of them from what I saw. Tim McGraw, I didn't know was
The last name.
Yeah, but I didn't, like, that's crazy. Patrick Monahan, singer from Train, he's Irish. Jim Morrison, I didn't know.
That's an Irish last name, Morrison.
Yeah, Lacey Mosley, a former singer of Flyleaf, she's part Irish too. Julianne Hough, your girl, she's a...
Not Julianne, Derek.
Derek, oh, excuse me. Danny Hutton, the singer from Three Dog Night.
Okay.
He's Irish. I'm almost done here. Bradley Nowell, singer of a former singer of Sublime.
Oh,
passed away. He is Tom Petty.
Okay.
Trent Reznor was on the list.
All your boys are on there.
Yeah.
M Shadows and Jimmy the Rep Sullivan from Avenged Sevenfold. Britney Spears. Bruce Springsteen, Gwen Stefani, Corey Taylor, and Justin Timberlake. Also, too, I guess to close out the whole thing, there was one connection, too, on here. So you guys noticed that I mentioned Kurt Cobain as being having some Irish ancestry. So I found a cover. I don't know if you guys have heard it. Sinead O'Connor actually covered a Nirvana song.
Oh, really?
And it was acoustic. And it was actually, I found it to be, I liked it a lot better than the Nirvana version. And the song was, All Apologies. Oh. So she did a cover of All Apologies. It was on, I guess, her album Universal Mother. Okay. So it's on the playlist. So if you guys want to listen to something for St. Patrick's, listen to that playlist. There's a lot of interesting stuff on there. Reason why I brought that too was because Chris Cornell was on there on the list. And he covered Sinead O'Connor. I know Nothing Compares to You is a cover of a Prince song that Sinead O'Connor did. Well, Chris Cornell covered it too.
Oh, that's right. I've heard it. Yeah.
And it's
quite good. His version
it's
is good. Nice.
Yeah. So I have that on a playlist too. And I just thought that was a cool little circle that Sinead O'Connor covered Nirvana and then Chris Cornell covered Sinead O'Connor.
Yeah.
So it was just like a little circle and they all have some kind of Irish connection in them. But that's what I had to close out. You know, if you guys have anything to add.
Nope. I don't know if he counts, but Mark Wahlberg. Back when he was rapping, he was Marky Mark.
Is he Irish?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess he does count. I mean, he was a musician. I mean,
yeah, for sure. Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Oh my God, I don't have to put us.
Come on, Mario, feel Marky the vibration.
Mark. Okay, I'll put that on there. Marky Mark. Okay, so he's gonna go on.
Feel it.
So that's all I have. Do you guys have anything else? No, right?
No, I mean, I tried to stick to like. Irish. I mean,
well, yeah. So did I. Yeah. But then I also found it interesting to find like the Irish Americans too, because they're like they do have like some of them were like legit half Irish, and it's still interesting, you know. And it kind of explains why Metallica covered Whiskey in the Jar in the first place. Not only because they were influenced by these bands that came before them, but they are like as a whole 50% Irish or less, I should say, maybe probably one. But I just found it interesting, and you know. To see like some of these bands, like their parents, one of their parents was legit Irish. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it's crazy. Yeah,
no, the Irish are really prolific peoples. And if you look at like other forms of art in American culture and history, you know, literature and so on, there's going to be a ton of Irish influence and all of that because of the huge influx of Irish immigrants to the United States in the mid to late 1800s, early 1900s. So. A lot of that.
No, and I mean, I learned a lot of stuff, you know, today, as I always do, especially when there's a lot of history involved. Mm-hmm. But if you guys want to listen to any of these songs that we mentioned or any of the artists that we mentioned, like I said, the playlist is on Spotify. You can just find it on rocktalkhappyhourpod.com. Next week, we're going to take off. I don't know what the following week's topic is going to be, but we do have a list, so we'll pick from that.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, I don't know. I mean, you guys can friend us on Untappd. Well, you can find me on Untappd. I usually post beers that I'm drinking that aren't on the show. Just hit us up and let us know what you think of the show and stuff. And I don't know what else to say. I had fun drinking these beers. And then we're going to drink more Irish beers after we close this out. So you'll see those beers on Instagram. With that said, I don't know. You guys be safe and have a happy St. Patrick's Day until we see y'all next time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Later. Cheers.
Bye.